Yo, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Mike Bartner Show. And a lot of shit has gone down in the last week or so. My New York Islanders made two kind of interesting, at times head-scratching moves, bringing in Carson Soucy and Andre Palat. Artemi Panarin, they dropped the letter 2 weeks ago. Now Artemi Panarin is just getting straight healthy scratch leading up to the Olympics because they might trade him before. We got to talk about the potential suitors that could be in for Artemi Panarin. The Toronto Maple Leafs season is all but over after an absolute brutal homestand, as well as losing last night to Seattle Kraken. I want to talk about the Western Conference's wild card race and Pacific third spot race, because I feel like in the West, all the focus is on those top five contenders, and those are the clear-cut top five teams. But there is an absolute bonkers shit show playoff race going on right now in the Western Conference that I feel like is not getting nearly enough light shined on it. And then we're going to talk about some extensions that happened. The Josh Stone 7-year deal at $6.9 million. I literally was about to upload last week's podcast, and then that deal happened. Sam Malinsky, a 4-year deal at $4.75 million. His story making it to the NHL is just straight up remarkable. I have a BR post coming up. It might be out by the time that you're listening to this. Going into it, I'll break it down. And the Ben Chiarot extension at 3 years, $3.85 million. That already looks good for the Detroit Red Wings because he scored the goal where Patrick Kane set the American board player points record. So yeah, let's get into it. We're going to start with Panarin, as much as I want to start with my New York Islanders, be a little bit biased. I understand that the common folk definitely wants to hear more so about Artemi Panarin. And yeah, he might get traded in next week. Definitely going to get traded at this year's deadline. And I think we could agree the price should be roughly probably a roster player, hopefully somebody in their 20s that makes between $3 to $6 million, because the money is going to be kind of tough to work for Artemi Panarin, considering he's all the way up at $11.6 million, half retained. Get that to $5.8 million. So a roster player, an A-minus prospect, a first, and then maybe another meh B-ish prospect, a second or a third round pick on top of that. So basically, just a little bit more than the Brock Nelson package, as well as you're definitely going to have some kind of roster player going back because of salary cap reasons. Because Artemi Panarin is a better player than Brock Nelson, even with that salary cap discrepancy, Panarin's still a guy that can get you in. And I'm saying Brock Nelson right now is playing amazing, but relative to last year at the deadline when he wasn't having the best season with the Islanders, shout out Brock Nelson. He's fifth in the NHL right now in goals. It's absolutely crazy. But yeah, Panarin is still 30-ish goals, 90 points, 95 points. That could definitely take a team over the top at this year's trade deadline. I dropped a tier list over on Instagram, and I'm kind of just going to break it down. I'm just going to look at the suitor angle. Really, last episode, we talked about the Rangers on the whole. We know that the Rangers are going through their retool. The letter dropped. They're doing all that good stuff. I just want to look at potential spots where it makes sense, why I think it would make sense, because some people did disagree with my tier list. But yeah, at the top of my tier list for Artemi Panarin, it was the Colorado Avalanche and the Vegas Golden Knights. These are two teams that should just be nuclear all in. Vegas, because they're always fucking nuclear all in. They always find a way to get these guys. I don't know how they would get Artemi Panarin. And I think for him, it would have to be some kind of rental. But I mean, they trade every goddamn pick. They trade every prospect. Would it shock me if tomorrow night I'm looking at my phone and I see Trevor Conley, a 2028 first round pick, William Karlsson, or I forget who makes there's two guys that make $2.5, $3 million in the Vegas Golden Knights. They get bundled up for Artemi Panarin. Would that shock you? Nothing shocks me at this point with the Vegas Golden Knights. So although they don't need an Artemi Panarin, they actually needed Erasmus Anderson, especially on that right side with Petrangelo no longer there. They don't need an Artemi Panarin. They need more of a goaltender, but what goaltending option is out there at this point? Wallstead's getting floated. I don't think that that's going to happen relatively soon. And that's not an immediate right now answer for the Vegas Golden Knights. That could be a team like Ottawa's solution for the next 7-8 years. But for a team like Vegas, they need to care about right now. And Wallstead is not a definite improvement over Aiden Hill right now. So it wouldn't shock me if they did something crazy like that. And I'd say, why the hell not, considering he kind of fits into their core. Some of their older guys, like Mark Stone's 33, 34 years old. Hurdle's 31, 32. And then Colorado. Colorado really doesn't have any weaknesses, so this I would like a lot more. They're number one in the entire league. What this would look like in terms of a deal, I'm not so sure, just because they don't really have any blue chip prospects. This would probably have to just be a 2027's first, a 2028 first. And screw it. Why would you not do that if you're the Colorado Avalanche, considering right now they are the Stanley Cup favorite? I'm not going to try to be different and say like, oh, I'd pick. Actually, maybe I would pick Tampa Bay to win it right now. But I can understand the argument of them. They're definitely the favorite right now just because they've been so good. And adding Artemi Panarin to your second line, I guess, alongside of Brock Nelson would make their, like, maybe the one thing that I have some concerns about is outside of the MacKinnon and Natchez line. And I know that Brock Nelson has been so good, but how will that exactly translate to the playoffs? If you add an Artemi Panarin on the wing of a Brock Nelson and you bump down, like, who? Lehkonen, Landeskog down to a third line, and then you have your third line that really starts to click, guys like Ross Colton, that would just make them, then they would maybe be on the tier of that 2022 team in terms of having that absolutely insane offensive depth. Because you look at that 2022 team, they had, like, outside of the big guys, they had Burakovsky, they had Kadri, they were just an absolute wagon, like, three lines deep. I'm not sure they're quite there yet in terms of that overall depth within the forward core. And Artemi Panarin would be gross. They could maybe somehow find a way to move out some money to maybe re-sign him, but it would also potentially be a rental. But at this point for Colorado, they are starting to get up there in age. They're not old, but they're also not young, if that makes sense. MacKinnon's, what, like 29 years old? Makar's already 27 years old. Nelson's 33, 34. Tays 31-ish. Landeskog's 32. Natrushkin's 31. So they're not as, like, nuclear all-in as the Vegas Golden Knights, just because I think MacKinnon and Makar are going to be top 10 players in the NHL for the next 8-9 years. Like, their window is still open just because of those two, but how they would replace those two might close the window a little bit, but they're still going to be somewhat of a competitive team. So those are the two teams where I just say, like, full green light, floor it, whatever it takes. My second tier, there were six different teams in this tier. I think Carolina and Minnesota are kind of in the same boat. It's not the perfect fit, but they need to be super aggressive, if that makes sense. They both need second-line centers, but Artemi Panarin is better than any second-line center option out there right now, unless they could somehow get Robert Thomas, which, again, I still don't get why Robert Thomas rumors are, like, floating around. Like, he is so clearly St. Louis's best player. If they're trading Robert Thomas, they're, like, fully nuking it. You know what I'm saying? Like, why would you trade Robert Thomas? He's still, like, 27 years old. He's still signed for the next, like, six seasons at $8.125 million. That's a whole different can of worms. Maybe I'll dive into that eventually. But I see rumors picking up on that, and I just don't see where it's coming from. But, yeah, like, yeah, you could get Nazem Kadri or Ryan O'Reilly. Those are nice ads. But Artemi Panarin, although, again, not the perfect fit, the player for the Minnesota Wild, he would have immediately become, what, their second best forward, 2A, 2B to a Matthew Boldy. In Carolina, he'd become their best offensive forward. I like Aho more as a two-way guy. Seth Jarvis is maybe on the same level when you combine his offense and defense. But in terms of that high-end offensive difference maker, he'd easily be the best player on the Carolina Hurricanes within their forward core. And that's what we've seen them lack every single year. I talk about it. They always run into a goddamn Russian goalie that's just able to stop their kind of softball weak shots from the outside. They need a true playmaker that can break the game. And I think Artemi Panarin, even at 34, 35 years old, could potentially be that. I also had the LA Kings in this tier, which I know some people might be scratching their head because they're, like, out of a playoff spot in a pretty dog shit Western Conference playoff race that we're going to talk about later. I just, like, they got to do something for Anze Kopitar in his final season. And what's the plan after Anze Kopitar? Because you're basically losing your number one center that makes only $7 million. How are you going to replace that? If he's willing to go to LA, they're just in this really weird spot. They're fucked both presently, both in the intermediate and both in the future. Why not try to take a swing on Artemi Panarin? And at least you can act like a serious franchise for the next couple of years. Not saying it would take them over the top, but it would at least give them, like, somewhat of an upset potential if they ended up facing off against an Edmonton, a Vegas, maybe not a Colorado, but it would make them somewhat scary. Right now, they're an easy first-round exit, probably losing in five games. Just do something for the love of God. The Detroit Red Wings, again, I just like it because it would further signal that they're going for it. Not saying you go, like, all in, but again, a first this year from Detroit with the way that they're clicking is only going to be, like, 23rd overall. Like, it's not that valuable an asset. And they have a bunch of, I'm not saying give up, like, your top tier prospects. I'm not saying give up Axel Sandin Palika, but I'm trying to think of who's a Buchnikov in a first. Would you do that? He's been very good in Russia, don't get me wrong, but he's not NHL proven or something like that. I think that could make sense for them. And he's obviously has pre-existing chemistry with Kane. How would their line shuffle out with Kane, DeBrincat, and Panarin? Yes, that maybe is a little bit of undersized wingers. But again, that would make them a serious threat in the Eastern Conference right now. I think they could win a round, but I think that they would lose to Tampa Bay. I think they would eventually lose to Carolina Hurricanes. So that would make them somewhat of an interesting team. And hopefully, I think that they could find a way to get the money. They might have to dump like a comp or confer in order to be able to re-sign him, but they could make the money work in terms of an extension because they have Raymond at only $8 million. They have Sider at 8.5. They have Larkin at 8.7. DeBrincat only has 2 years left, but DeBrincat's at 7.8. So they can make the money work for some kind of extension. The Dallas Stars, that's kind of still, that's similarly to Colorado and Vegas. Like, why not? You're going for it. I just think it's an even worse fit because when I think about the Dallas Stars, I don't really think that their forward core is the problem. I'd rather they target something on defense, especially the right side defense. Thought they maybe would have been on Rasmus Anderson, but I'm still not going to hate it if they absolutely go for it. And also, it's not a great fit just because they're already going to have to re-sign. They're already having a tough time re-signing. I think they're going to get it done. But Jason Robertson needs a big fatty deal, and every week that they don't sign Jason Robertson, his price is raising like $250,000. So from that perspective, it would probably have to be a pure rental. And then the last team that I'd have in this tier of like, I'd like them to make this move is the Utah Mammoth. Does he fit their timeline? Not quite, but I think that Utah, it's going to be tough to attract players, if we're going to be honest, in terms of free agency, in terms of trades, guys waving. Not saying it's like a bottom three market in the NHL, but if you have the opportunity to go out and get an Artemi Panarin, and I can see some criticism that they already have a couple smaller skill guys, but right now I think that putting him within their top six would make it really, really special, and I wouldn't hate the idea of re-signing him to some 3 to 4 year deal at a decent cap hit because, like we talked about with Detroit, and their cap sheet is even more open. They don't have as many bad contracts as, say, Detroit, but they have Dylan Gunther at, what's he at? 7.1? It's 7.14, I think. What was it, like an 8x7.1? They have Cooley locked up at, what was his, $9.6, $10 million, which is going to be a great deal. Keller still has a bunch of years pretty cheap. Like, they can definitely make the money work. And again, just being able to bring in yet another highly skilled guy in that Western Conference where it's going to be war for the next 4 to 5 years. And Keller, I mean, Keller isn't that young at this point. Not saying he's Artemi Panarin old, but he's 28, 29 years old. Schmaltz is getting up there in age as well. So they also should be going for it. The teams that I said that I wouldn't hate it for, Tampa Bay, they're similar to Vegas. They go for everybody, but their forward core is so goddamn good. They don't really have to worry about forwards that much. My New York Islanders, like, I guess, like, I think if they got Artemi Panarin and they only gave up, let's say they gave up Jonathan Drouin just for salary cap reasons why at $4 million for another season, and they got Artemi Panarin, we'll talk about it more with the Palat and Susie deals, but, like, if they made a super aggressive move like that, I'm not saying they'd be in the even the second tier of contenders, but, like, you can maybe convince me on them making an Eastern Conference Finals, making a Stanley Cup Finals. If they had the goaltending, they had a true game-breaking offensive talent, and imagine him alongside a Barzal or a Horvat, and with Matthew Schaefer emerging as a number one defenseman, like, they would become a very dangerous team. Not saying a top-tier team, but a dangerous team. We'll talk about more about the Islanders when it comes to those trades and my overall present and future, how I think about them, but it would be interesting. It would be interesting when looking at the Islanders. The Oilers, much like Tampa Bay, they have enough forwards that's not, and especially they have enough skilled forwards. I'd look for more of a two-way guy if you are going the forward route. Buffalo, they got to worry about re-signing Alex Tuch. I don't think you'd go super aggressive, and also they're pretty young. Washington, if they were in a playoff spot or at least closer to a playoff spot, I'd be honestly down for Panarin, especially if this is Ovechkin's final season. You just give that $9.5 million that Ovechkin is making and you throw it to Artemi Panarin. He immediately, much like a Carolina, becomes their top offensive forward and can maybe be that game-breaking talent that they kind of lacked last year against Carolina Hurricanes. Florida, they get everybody, but again, I think their top nine, when they are fully healthy, is amazing, and right now they're not in a playoff spot. I'm not sure you're going to go that aggressive, especially if Barkov's not returning. Not saying you just like sell this season, but it might be a lost season, and we definitely understand why. Anaheim, if they got more safely in a playoff spot, I could understand giving Leo Carlson, that extremely, extremely talented winger, to play with. Right now they're not in a playoff spot. Right now, do you want to pull a trigger on a move that aggressive? And then the Boston Bruins, there's maybe some kind of angle where you realize, okay, we're going for it. I talked about this at length. As much as you like the retooling moves that they made last year, at the end of the day, their big three is between the ages of 27 to 29 right now. Like, they're in the midst of their prime. If they continue their winning ways, which I think that they're like 12-2 in their last 14 or something like that, like, maybe you truly go for it. You don't give them the Toronto pick this year. You don't give them James Higgins, but you give them a first round pick, Matty Poitras, and something else. And I think that that could make sense. You give them the Florida first round pick in 2027 they have or something like that. Maybe it could make sense. They also need a number one center. Don't get me wrong. Similarly to Carolina and Minnesota, it's not the perfect fit, but it could make sense. And then in terms of it making no sense, St. Louis, Winnipeg, I've seen Seattle being linked to him. Apparently that'd be really dumb. Pittsburgh, no. San Jose is the one I made the YouTube TikTok video on it. I trust Mike Greer. I think that this would be bad though, just because they're a team that's still ascending. This year they're smashing expectations. I don't like the idea of bringing in Artemi Panarin, especially, and we're going to get to it. He wants like 4 to 5 years at like $10 to $12 million like that. That is scary. I think Artemi Panarin is going to be a very good player into his late 30s. Will he be $10, $11 million at 38 years old? No, I don't think so. And then I think that he would ultimately hamper your team. So although San Jose, they have a boatload of money. Again, if he wants 4 to 5 years, if you could re-sign him 2 years, $14 million, that could make sense, but I'm not sure Panarin's going to want that. I think he just wants one consolidated payday. So from that perspective, no. Philadelphia, self-explanatory. Chicago, they're basically San Jose, but a little bit worse and even younger. Ottawa, you got goaltending problems. New Jersey, you got goaltending problems, and you have enough small skilled guys. Nashville, I don't know what you're doing. Montreal, you have enough very good young forwards. You don't need to give up a bunch of assets and give up a bunch of money to Artemi Panarin. Columbus, he left you guys, so I don't think they're going to be going for him. Vancouver's rebuilding. Calgary's rebuilding. And the Toronto Maple Leafs have their own problems. They should be selling, not buying. But yeah, I think that it's very interesting. I think he has a lot of leverage because he has that no move clause, which really makes this fascinating. Because if a team, yes, a team maybe wants him as a rental, but maybe he just doesn't want to go to a team unless he has a contract extension in place. So although I think Colorado, Vegas, Carolina, Minnesota make all the sense in the world, those teams, it might be tough to get a contract extension done. So it wouldn't surprise me if in this situation, a team kind of out of nowhere, like a San Jose, scoops him up because they're basically willing to pay him that much. They're basically thinking, oh, it's basically an unrestricted free agent signing. We'll give him this money now, give him this extension as well as a first and a solid prospect. A very, very interesting situation. Like Brock Nelson last year as an Islanders fan, he had a 16-team no trade clause. So he basically put all the no playoff teams, and he didn't have Winnipeg on his trade list. But yeah, there was more options. Here it becomes very, very interesting because it seems like he's not that open to some kind of rental. He wants to pick a spot. He doesn't want to stress until July 1st. Maybe that helps my New York Islanders in terms of the fact that he gets to stay local to the New York area. But it's going to be very, very interesting to watch. I just think that it should be a team that is right now in a playoff spot, right now highly contending. I don't like the idea of a team on the rise going all in on an Artemi Panarin that is going to be 35 years old in October. He is not very young. So yeah, that's my thoughts on Artemi Panarin. We're going to stick in the New York area with my New York Islanders, Andre Palat and Carson Soucy. Imagine telling me, Carson Soucy, I would have believed, but imagine telling me a week ago that Andre Palat and Carson Soucy would be New York Islanders. I guess Palat, I maybe could believe just because Darce was the assistant general manager in Tampa. But yeah, the net of these deals for the Islanders, at least, Palat, Soucy, a 2027 sixth round pick for Siplakov. And in the third round, they basically move up 10 spots. They go from their own third round pick to New Jersey's third round pick. So an earlier third round pick, unless the Devils play insane, unless the Islanders shit their pants. It's a soft buy. Like I can't get too mad. When he initially traded for Soucy, I was a little bit confused, if I'm going to be honest. Although we needed a third pair left-handed defenseman, he was some kind of rental. And is he that much better than Carter? I'm going to say Carter George. That's the Los Angeles Kings goalie prospect. Isaiah George, is he that much better? I'm not so sure. I think that he's better, but I would have just rolled out with Isaiah George. But then once he does the Palat deal, at first though, I was shitting my pants. I was thinking, did he just take on Palat for free? Did he give up assets for Andre Palat? And that would have been like DEFCON 1. Like I would have been absolutely terrified. Like, Darsh, what are you doing? But the fact that he got that third round pick back, basically got a better third round pick as well as a sixth round pick, it makes me more palatable to this trade and to this idea of kind of soft buying, at least for this season. I think this team has deserved some kind of a buy. Like, you can say, yes, long-term, Carson Soucy and Palat aren't going to do much for this team. It's just going to keep them solid to good, maybe hurt the future of this team. But it's kind of tough to look on this big picture when it comes to pro sports. Right now, I think this team has deserved it safely in a playoff spot, and it's not like this massively moves the needle in terms of asset allocation for the future. It's just Darsh reevaluating the team. This is an evaluation year, is what I'm trying to say. Like, he's just trying to see it out. And yes, maybe he could go aggressive for Artemi Panarin. Yes, he could maybe go aggressive for someone else. But I think at least at this year's deadline, I think he's going to kind of, that's it. This is it. If they stay in a playoff spot, if they go on some kind of run, then maybe this summer I pull the trigger on some kind of big move. I pull the trigger on a Colorado first round pick, our own first round pick that's 22nd overall. And then we go for an Elias Pettersson. We go for Jordan Kyrou. We go for a Robert Thomas. We go for somebody that's still in their prime and can help us win right now. Because when looking at the Islanders, like, what's so tough with them and what makes this harder than other situations is, yes, you have Matthew Schaefer that is this franchise, near generational player, if I do say so myself, that's 18 years old. The problem is there's no other proven young guys around him, at least right now. The youngest guy is Simon Holmstrom, who's a 2019 draft pick, and he's been playing very good. He has like 9 goals, 9 assists, 18 points in his last 23 games. I really like Holmstrom. I think he's going to be a staple on the second line for a long time, but it's not like Schaefer has... Also, I'm very high on Cal Ritchie, but he has not proved himself to be a future very good second-line center, low-end first-line center, where right now you know that you have Horvat, Barzal, and Sorokin. Elite, elite players. Sorokin, maybe the best goaltender in the entire NHL. Barzal and Horvat, both low-end to solid number one centers. Like, you know what you have right now, and you know that the Eastern Conference is kind of wide open, if we're going to be honest. Like, I think that they would lose to a Tampa Bay team. I think they would lose to a fully healthy Florida team. I think they probably lose to Carolina. But do those teams absolutely scare the shit out of you? No, like, especially if Sorokin is playing to the level that we've seen he is capable of right now. So it's just a very weird spot for the Islanders. Yes, they could trade Jean-Gabriel Pageau, and I still think that they probably should trade him and just let Cal Ritchie run as that third line center. But also, again, that's putting a lot of faith. We know it this season, they're not getting a top 10 pick. Next season, unless they completely tear it down, there was never going to be this full teardown. I thought there was going to be more of a retool to the future, but now it's looking like it's going to be a retool to contend relatively soon, where they're in this weird spot where, or can you say with certainty that Eklund is going to be a 65, 70 point first line? Do you think Yzerman is no doubt going to be a 35 goal scorer? Aitchison's going to be an amazing second pair defenseman. Whoever you pick this year is going to be awesome. You can't say that without certainty. You can only look at the team right now. And although, again, I think that they're a third tier team, if we're going to be honest, that can maybe make some noise with some goaltending. If they were to add either at this year's deadline next year, a Robert Thomas, a Jordan Kyrou, and Elias Pettersson, especially more so Thomas and Pettersson. I don't think Kyrou's a massive needle mover, but if they were able to potentially do something like that, they become a dangerous team. And yeah, with ownership, I just don't think that it was ever that feasible that they were going to be this full teardown. Barzal, Horvat, Sorokin, they were never going to get traded. They had serious term on their contract. Their only assets that they could trade was Anders Lee. He's played good enough this season, and I think that he's going to take some kind of hometown deal to stay, to retire an Islander as the captain. The Pageau deal obviously scares me a lot because you look at what Wennberg got 3 years at $6 million. You look at what Lowry got, what goddamn Dvorak got. That scares me, but I think Darsh is just evaluating right now. And I think they've just been so good on the ice. And I know a lot of that is just because of the goaltending. But again, Sorokin signed long-term. It's not like they're going to have shit goaltending next year. It might not be Vezina caliber next year, but it's still probably going to be very good and good for the next 5 years, where this team could be in the mix. And I know people are going to scream about how I've always said, like, you got to tear it down. You got to rebuild, tank if you're not fully in that top tier. I'm just thinking practically, like, yeah, maybe if I was the general manager back in like 2023, 2024, when there was no Matthew Schaefer, yeah, maybe I would have blown it up there. But I can see where Darsh is coming from. making little buys, small buys, and just thinking, oh, if this one guy becomes available, then we can fully take that next step and maybe get back into some kind of contention. But yeah, again, with the way Aitchison's looked in his first year, with Yzerman dealing with injuries, I still really like the farm system, but it's looking like those guys might be more complementary pieces. Meanwhile, you have your top guys between the ages, besides Schaefer, between the ages of 28 to 30, unless they somehow miss the playoffs, which I don't think is going to happen right now, especially in the Metro Division. Like, the next closest team's like 8 points away. They're not gonna get that lottery luck. They're not gonna get into the top eight. So the way you have to go about it is smart asset management, which I think that those two trades were, bringing in a third pair left-handed defenseman, bringing in a guy that can hopefully be a factor. He's playing right now on the top line, which is, I'm definitely going to use that joke and be like, the Devils gave us a goddamn top liner. I did that with Heinemann. But yeah, I just think you see how it goes this season, and then you see what becomes available. Like, it's kind of tough because, yeah, if they had Noah Dobson right now, maybe they would be a little bit of a better team. Granted, he wanted 10.5. He wanted $11 million. That's maybe where also you'll criticize me in terms of my thought process, considering they shipped out a 25-year-old defenseman. Now they might go out and get a Jordan Kyrou or Elias Pettersson. That's all valid. But again, I don't think Schaefer has this amazing rookie year if Noah Dobson's there right now. So with the Islanders, and also thankfully, I need to bring this up, at least in 2026, they might have some kind of off-ramp if it does start to go a little bit south. They don't have pending unrestricted free agents like Barzal and Horvat, but they will have Drouin, Palat, and Palmieri as pending unrestricted free agents. That's all something you got to consider. Like, they don't have Romanov, who, although he was shit, he might be able to come back for the playoffs, and I think that he can bounce back to at least being a meh second pair guy, which he has to be at $6.25 million. And they don't have Palmieri, who was playing some of the best hockey of his entire career to start out this year. He was on pace for like 25 goals, 55 points. So once they get those guys back next season, hopefully that'll help as well. Where next deadline, they could also potentially move off some guys if this year was a little bit fugazi. They're just in a weird spot where, do you fully go for it? Like, the worst, like, there is still a worst case scenario where they don't go for it right now. They keep Peugeot. Their older guys, Barzal, Horvat, Sorokin, start to regress while Schaefer's, I don't know what I'm doing with my hands right now. Schaefer's going into his prime, but the big three, the three out of the big four, Schaefer, Barzal, Horvat, and Sorokin, start to regress. And yes, you have Aitchison, Eklund, Yzerman at the NHL level on ELCs making like nothing, but your three other proven very good elite NHLers are starting to regress. And then in 6-7 years, that was not intentional, Schaefer's the best defenseman in the NHL, but you don't have much around him. You have a retirement home, Horvat, Barzal, that are still good players, but not that good. And there's nothing around him. So do you somewhat go for it right now? I'm at the point where I don't want Darce to half-ass it. Either go for it, go for a Kyrou, go for a Pettersson, go for a Thomas, go for an Artemi Panarin, and just say like, yeah, this team is, I believe in this team. I think that we could make some moves and actually maybe make an Eastern Conference Finals, make a Stanley Cup Finals, or you sell Peugeot. You start selling guys. This kind of half-see, I don't think we'll work with this team just because, again, their big four is 18 years old, 28 years old, 29 years old, and 30 years old. It's not like all of these guys are the same age, and your most valuable asset is the one guy that is young while the three others are a little bit old. So that's kind of just my rant on the New York Islanders. Again, they're in a much better spot than they were a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. These are good problems to have, that we're in a playoff spot and we have a good prospect pool. We have a true near generational defenseman. We have maybe the best goalie in the NHL, but they're at a weird spot. They don't have to choose right now. They might choose right now, but are you going to think more to the future, or are you going to go aggressive, is what Darce has to decide at some point in the next 18 months. By next deadline, we need to have like a direction on this team, at least for the next 3 to 4 years. And yeah, I was maybe losing some faith in the 30 minutes before we knew that the Islanders were getting a third and a sixth round pick to take on Andre Palat. And also with that deal, I should have mentioned at the start, they are getting rid of Siplikov's 2-year deal at 2.25. So they are, it's not fully like they're taking on $6 million. They're taking on what, 3.75? I still don't love that Palat has another year on his deal, don't get me wrong, but they also are moving out some bad money that was basically useless. And as long as Palat, the thing with Palat is, this season he completely fell off a wagon. Like, his stats were, with the Devils, 4 goals, 10 points in 51 games. In the prior years, he was still really bad, but he had 23 points in 49 games, 31 points in 71 games, 28 in 77. So as long as he can be a 30-point guy, solid defense, like that's, I'll take it. A physical presence, I'll take it. But yeah, that's kind of my ramble on the Islanders. Hopefully I wasn't too all over the place, but I might have been. The Toronto Maple Leafs, they're just, they kind of got to know their direction after this most recent stretch, and that is sell, 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 baby. They had a horrible homestand, including a loss to Mitch Marner on home ice. That was tragic, and then they just lost last night to the Seattle Kraken. It was so funny. I saw somebody post, sorry, just take a drink of my water real quick. Post the Philip Hollander and a seventh round pick for Jared McCann trade graphic. Then someone also posted the Brandon Shanahan clip of like, yeah, we do this trade, and then we're basically trading Hollander in a seventh to keep Kerfoot. And even in the moment, like, that's what people, I feel like, forget with that trade, which that's not what I'm talking about with this whole thing about the Leafs. This kind of just sprouted up. But yeah, the fact that they did that, even though McCann had like 40 points in 55 games in the COVID shortened season, then they were like, actually, we'd rather have Alex Kerfoot. But yeah, they're in a brutal spot. Like, this is all negative. Like, the Islanders, it's like, do you go for it now? Do you look to the future because you have that generational young defenseman and a bunch of prospects? Leafs really don't have shit, man. They really do not have shit. When looking at it, the only things of value that they really have is Austin Matthews, who you're not moving off of just because of his play the last year and a half. I still think we saw it at the start of January, at least the first two-thirds of January, him get back to that elite, elite level. But based on what he's done the last year and a half, you're going to get 60 to 70% of what you would have got for him 2 years ago. You're just not going to do that. And in order for the Leafs to succeed, they need Austin Matthews to be that top 10 player in the NHL that can get you 60 goals that needs to show up in the playoffs. So they're not moving off Austin Matthews. I've remained steadfast in that. We'll go to Matthew Nyes. I saw that the SDPN podcast, Steve Dangle podcast, which I really like their podcast, they said that they might move Matthew Nyes, which I thought was kind of like absolutely insane, if I'm going to be honest. Like, Matthew Nyes, he might be, like, you maybe would trade off Austin Matthews and just fully blow it up the next 2 to 3 years before you trade Matthew Nyes, who has 6 years left at 7.75 and is a 22, 23-year-old, 6'3" wrecking ball unicorn. Like, you do not move off Matthew Nyes. You can't move off Morgan Riley. That's not going to change anything. You're going to have to attach assets. You're not moving off Stolarz or Wohl just because those guys, Wohl is still young and Stolarz isn't going to get you much on a trade market. And besides that, there's not much to really trade outside of William Nylander. John Tavares, I think he has a no move clause, and that would just be like, that'd be dick. And honestly, he slowed down a decent amount in the last like 2 to 3 months, where, although his contract's still very good, he's not going anywhere. It's William Nylander, in my opinion, if you wanted to massively shake up this core. And that might be what it has to take to shake up this core. Because again, they might not have their first-round pick this year. It's top five protected. They're the eighth worst team in the NHL right now. And I can pull it up. I should have had it pulled up. But the gap between them and the fifth worst team, so to get within the odds where they'd have a decent shot at keeping their own pick from the Boston Bruins, right now, that's Chicago Blackhawks, 51 points in 54 games. The Leafs have 57 points in 54 games. So the Chicago Blackhawks have a six-point lead on them to finish bottom five. So they're probably losing their pick. Yes, you could maybe bench Matthews, bench Nylander. But even then, it would take some work to potentially get within that top five. And even if you have the fifth best odds, you still might fall to sixth, to seventh. So yeah, like, they're not going to, might not have their first round pick this year. They don't have their first round pick next year unless it's top 10 from the Scott Laudon trade. And it's not like they have any prospects worth a damn outside of like Easton Cowan, who's having a good season, but he has like, I think, 17 points in 43 games. It's not like he's knocking it out of the park where he's like this blue chip top 20 U23 player in the NHL. Like, they're basically a barren wasteland in terms of assets. So William Nylander, he has a full no movement clause. Don't get me wrong. I'm aware of that. But in terms of moving somebody that still has a lot of trade value while also being what? I think he's 30 years old at this point, 2014 draft. He's 30 years older. He's turning 30 years old relatively soon. He's still, again, a great player, especially in the regular season. Moving off him could make sense. Again, if you're going down that nuclear, like, we need big, big sweeping changes, I think that is the guy because, again, there's only three guys of actual fucking value on this team. I think William Nylander is the clear pick. At the deadline this year, I think you got to trade Bobby McMahon. I know that he's a beloved guy. I think he's a local guy, but he's 30 years old. He only makes like $1.3 million this season. You could probably get 2 second-round picks, maybe even a first-round pick for him just because that cap hit is so low. Like, you look at that Kiefer Sherwood package, and I think it's the exact same thing for Bobby McMahon. He's going to want some kind of 4x4 on the open market, and he's 30 years old. If you're Toronto Maple Leafs, are you going to do that? Like, that's just running back the exact same fucking team. Scott Laudon, I understand wanting to keep him, but he's only at a $1.5 million cap hit. You could get solid assets for that. I think that's like the non-negotiables. Like, the expiring guys need to be looked at. Obviously, guys like Brandon Carlo, who put you in this absolutely, you trading for him, not him personally, you trading for him, put you in this absolutely brutal mess where you might be giving the Boston Bruins the 7th or 8th overall pick. If you can move off him, somebody still might want a big right-handed defenseman that has term at like $3 million. There's a bunch of smaller guys that they could trade, but again, those guys really aren't worth much. Like, they, I guess this year you just tell Austin Matthews, like, you're going on LTIR, you're resting for the next 8 months, and then we're revisiting it, and you just pray to get within the top five of the NHL draft lottery. Because, yeah, if they don't have their pick this year, if they don't trade Bobby McDaniel, don't trade Scott Laudon, there's an argument for them being in a bottom three spot in the entire NHL. Like, it's tough. And again, it's not like these guys are getting younger. Obviously, Nyes and Cowan will improve. But outside of that, Tavares, he had that great first month. He's already regressing compared to prior years. Riley's, what, 31, 32? Matthews, 27, 28. Nylander, soon to be 30 years old. It's bad. It's really bad in Leafland right now. You could argue it's maybe even worse than the Rangers. At least the Rangers, like, they're going through this heavy retool rebuild objectively. I don't know how the Leafs get themselves out of this, like, their asset management. The Rangers have their first round pick in 2026, have their first round pick in 2027. Knowing their draft lottery luck, they'll probably get the first overall pick this year. The Leafs, like, they're out of the playoffs. Their most important night of the rest of the season is draft lottery night. If you get a top three pick, this all changes, of course. If they get Keaton Verhoeff, which I think probably might be their pick at first overall, just because, again, they have Nylander, they have Nyes. Like, if you get the first overall pick, yeah, you probably don't trade William Nylander. I'm not saying trade William Nylander right now. I'm saying in the summer, you reevaluate every option. But if you get within that top three and you can bring in somebody, the outlook definitely changes. But right now, it's really bad. Let's move on. The Western Conference playoff race. Right now, the Seattle Kraken have 59 points in 53 games. They are in a goddamn divisional spot. They're on pace for like 91 points. The Utah Mammoth have 60 points in 54 games. They're in the top wildcard spot. The Anaheim Ducks have 59 points in 54 games. They're in the second wildcard spot. The San Jose Sharks have 58 points in 52 games. So they have a higher points percentage than both the Mammoth and the Ducks. They're in the third spot. And then the LA Kings, the abomination that is the LA Kings, 57 points in 52 games. Now, a wild stat with this race that just made me laugh out loud: the Utah Mammoth have a plus 20 goal differential. The next closest among these five teams is the Seattle Kraken with -4. The Ducks check in at -13. The Sharks check in at -16. And the Kings check in at -10. Like, the Mammoth, I think we agree, the Mammoth are the best team of the five. I'm not saying they're going to no doubt make it, because again, they shat their fucking pants last night against the Carolina Hurricanes. You want to talk about a goddamn choke? I made a BR post about it. Like, the fact that they were up 4-2 in regulation, 1:59 to go. Obviously it was regulation, 1:59 to go, and they lost in regulation. Like, what the fuck? That was nuts. That they were playing really good up until that point. They had won 9 out of their last 11 games, but that, we got to check on them their next couple games. That could literally mentally break a team. But they're the one team where, especially with Logan Cooley coming back soon, he's been practicing with the team in a non-contact practice uniform. I'm decently confident that they're going to make it. They've definitely been a very streaky team, started out very good, then had like a long losing streak. But they're back on the upswing, and I think that they probably will make it. They better make it. And they're probably going to, they might be the most aggressive out of the bunch. And I just want to say with these five teams, it's pretty funny because it's like two teams that are completely irrelevant, if we're going to be honest, both now and the future with the Seattle Kraken and the LA Kings. Meanwhile, the three other teams, three teams that are ascending in like a playoff spot this year would really mean a lot to them. But Utah, they're probably the most the team that I'd be the most confident in terms of making it. The Sharks, it's really just going to come down to whether they buy more. Like, they got Kiefer Sherwood. I think he's going to be a very solid add. Obviously, if they bring in an Artemi Panarin, they're going to have the inside track in terms of making it. But even if they just bring in another guy, because with the Sharks, like, their top-end guy is very good. Just bringing in, like, an okay NHLer and bumping out one of their pretty shit guys at the bottom of their lineup would do wonders for this team. Like, this team's depth is non-existent. It's really just Celebrini, Smith, Eklund, Toffoli, Wenberg. I'm maybe forgetting one now, Sherwood. And then like the rest of the forward court is pretty bad. But they've definitely benefited the most from just like the crazy comebacks. And I'm not sure how sustainable it is, but they just seem like a kind of team of destiny. And it seems like Greer is willing to, much like a Darsh, reward this team for their kind of play. The Anaheim Ducks, if they can get healthy and they are so happy that the Olympic break is coming up because this was their lineup the other night. Alex Killorn, Granlund, Beckett, Seneca, first line, pretty decent. The second line was Kreider, Harkins, Colangelo. The third line was Veal, Paling, and Gauthier. I don't know why Gauthier was on the third line compared to the second line. And then Josh Johnston, Washi, and Moore. Like, they have been battling through injuries. If they get healthy, McTavish, Carlson all come back. Troy Terry as well. They've also been like Utah. They've just been so up and down. I do think that they have more talent than a San Jose Sharks. I do think they're a deeper team than a San Jose Sharks. Like a Dostal, like he just needs to be consistent, great at the start of the season, shit, now playing great yet again. I'd probably give them the inside track on the third Pacific spot, if I'm going to be honest, just because it's kind of obvious why they fell off a decent amount after their hot start. They have been dealing with some injuries, and when they are healthy, they have been a pretty good team. Then the LA Kings, we talked about Panarin, like they should do something to reward Anze Kopitar for his final season. It's going to be so depressing if Anze Kopitar's like final game, final regular season game is just like 87, like the Kings are eliminated from the playoffs. They're sitting at 87 points. I don't know who they play in their final games. And it's just like, they're going out on a whimper. Like, I think that they right now might be the team that are on the outside looking in just because everything has been going wrong with this team in terms of Byfield not taking that next step, in terms of Drew Doughty just being absolutely brutal. They've dealt with some injuries in terms of the goaltending. Yeah, I think I'm just fully out on the LA Kings. I had them out of the playoffs at the start of the season. I'm a dumbass and had the Vancouver Canucks in. And then the Seattle Kraken, I also like don't know what the fuck to think about them because they're might trade Shane Wright because they want to give Chandler Stephenson 20 minutes a goddamn night. You know my beef with Chandler Stephenson and why he's playing so much over these goddamn Seattle forwards. But yeah, right now, I'd go Utah, number one wild card spot. I'd go Anaheim, Pacific 3 spot, and I go the Sharks. I'm going to go with the Sharks for the second wild card spot, and then I'm going to go with Seattle, and I'm going to go with LA. Also, something I forgot to mention, the Sharks have the easiest schedule remaining in the entire NHL. Anaheim's second easiest, LA's third easiest, Utah's fifth easiest, Seattle's all the way down. I can't do the math right now. They have the 19th hardest, so like the 13th easiest. I think that's how the math works. So yeah, Seattle's also at a disadvantage in terms of the strength of schedule remaining. Meanwhile, the Sharks have one of the easiest. So that's my thoughts on the Western wild card right now. I hope it goes that way because, again, the way that LA and Seattle has managed the last like 2 to 3 years in terms of just staying perfectly mid, they don't deserve to get in. Let the fun young teams get absolutely slaughtered by the really good Western Conference teams, but at least it would be fun and not boring hockey. Do not let the LA Kings make the goddamn playoffs. Josh Doan, 7 years, $6.9 million. Nice. You can make a strong argument that Buffalo already has kind of won the Doan, Paterka, and Mike Kesselring deal just because of how good Doan has been. And I mentioned it like when the trade happened. I, of course, dove into the money puck, the expected goals, and he had like the third or fourth highest expected goals percentage in the entire NHL, only behind like Hyman, McDavid, and Jarvis. Like, it was nutty how good his underlying numbers were. He had 19 points in 51 games, only playing like 12 minutes a night and only shot 8%. Like, all the writing was on the wall for a breakout, and that's exactly what's happened in Buffalo thus far. He has 36 points in 52 games. He's been playing a lot with Thompson and with Tuck, And I know that definitely helps, but he's earned those minutes with those guys. And now he's up to shooting 14%, more of a sustained, more of a normal number, like 12 to 14% compared to the 8% prior. And he has 16 goals. Again, 16 goals, 36 points, 52 games played. And the analytics have also been fucking amazing. He has a 56.2% on ice expected goals percentage, and his relative expected goals percentage. I reference this stat all the time. What his on ice is versus when he's off the ice, the rest of the Buffalo Sabres, when he's not on the ice, how it is. The off ice is 47.2%. He has a 9% relative expected goals percentage, which is 12th in the entire NHL, only behind Jordan Kyrou, Jesper Bratt, Zach Hyman, Connor McDavid, Jason Robertson, Cole Caulfield, Luke Evangelista, Alex Turcotte. Those two kind of surprised me. Jack Hughes, Nick Suzuki, and Brandon Hagel. And Brandon Hagel is someone that I want to mention because I think that he is kind of just like Brandon Hagel. They're both 6'2" guys that do, they're basically Swiss Army knives. Like they're great skaters. They're willing to get into the greasy places, win board battles, and allow the more skilled forwards, like, not saying Doan's not skilled in his own right, but allow the goal scorers like Doan, like Tuck, to get open and to get them the puck in dangerous spots, which is exactly what Brandon Hagel has done in Tampa the last couple of years. I'm not saying that he's going to be Brandon Hagel, who had like 35 goals, 90 points, most at even strength, and not playing with Kucherov and Gensel and Point for a lot of that. But he is that ideal Swiss Army knife kind of guy. So even though the sample size isn't huge with the Josh Doan, just this play style of two-way, physical, hard-nosed, very good skating, it's going to translate. It has translated, and I think it's going to continue to. It's not like he's this undersized, soft sniper that has shot 17% and you give him this massive bag and you expect him to replicate this scoring year over year. No, his game is so translatable that even if he doesn't have monster offensive seasons every single year, you know that you're getting value in other ways. Like he is, the way that he impacts the game across it is very, very impressive, especially for a guy that's only 23, 24 years old. Like Brandon Hagel, it also took him time to build. I mean, he was like a 6th-round pick. Doan obviously had a lot more expectations, a lot more pressure, was a lot more known because of who his dad is. But if anything, probably motivated him just because people thought that he got drafted by the Arizona Coyotes because of his dad. And yeah, he's taken time to develop, but it has been really, really special. And I think that he can continue to be this 60 to 70. Well, he's not going to pace for 60 to 70 points this year, but I think he eventually will be a 60 to 70 point, very, very good two-way winger. And that's as soon as next year, as long as he puts up like 60 points, that's easily going to be worth $6.9 million. And he has, again, 7 years on this deal. You compare that to JJ Paterka, 34 points, 53 games this year. He's on a 5x7.7. So again, $800,000 more. And it kicks in this year versus Doan, not till next year. So you get another $8 million salary cap jump. That salary cap percentage goes down. And yeah, right now, I would definitely rather have Josh Doan, given the contracts, given the impact. Not saying JJ Paterka is not a very valuable player, but he is more of that one-dimensional scoring guy off the rush. Versus Doan impacts the game in a multitude of ways, and you're getting him cheaper. They are the same age. Doan was an overager when he got drafted by 1 year. They're both very good players, but then when you also add on top of that, Mike Kesselring, who has not exactly hit the ground running in Buffalo. He dealt with some injuries, unfortunately, but at least can be a solid third pair right-handed defenseman that can move the puck. He's 6'5". He can move pretty well, solid mobility. And if anything, I think that the Buffalo Sabres are going to kind of benefit from Kesselring's slow start and probably sign him to some kind of like 4-year deal at $4 million. And then that's going to look really good relatively soon. So, yeah, Kevin Adams stays a secret genius, man. Like, if they end up winning a Stanley Cup with this core, especially with like Doan and Kesselring, I need like a plaque at least of Kevin Adams in his time, because although it didn't come together under him, he has done some special moves. He did some really good moves. I of course thought Utah won this deal in the moment just because I thought Paterka was a proven commodity, but I gave like the Buffalo Sabres like a C+ or a B-, and people killed me even for that, even for saying like, I think Doan can be pretty good. I think Mike Kesselring is actually pretty valuable as a 6'5" right-handed defenseman, and Buffalo has like no goddamn right-handed defenseman. People were like, this is an F. They suck. Kevin Adams. Don't doubt Kevin Adams. Maybe he'll be your general manager of your favorite team one day, and you'll see. You'll witness the greatness. It might be delayed gratification. Might be 15 years in the making. He wasn't general manager for 15 years, but eventually, Buffalo is back, and they are back. Right now, Sam Malinsky, four-year deal at $4.75 million. And I'm not going to lie, like, I thought, although once I tell you the story of Sam Malinsky, you're going to understand why he took this money, because he has really been through it in his hockey journey. But I think that this is an amazing deal, and I'm surprised that Malinsky's camp at least didn't like entertain an offer sheet for a 27-year-old RFA that has 24 points in 51 games. I hope he is undersized, Jordan Spence effect, but I would have thought somebody maybe would have offered him like a 5-6 year deal at $5.5 million. He probably wants to stay put in Colorado, and I don't blame him at all for that. But this guy's journey is nutty, man. It is absolutely nutty. In his sophomore season, in Minnesota high school, he had 0 points in 24 games. He has a July birthday, so that was his sophomore season, but it was his draft year minus one. 0 points at the high school level. Like, don't get me wrong, Minnesota high school hockey is impressive, but 0 points. Then he takes a big step in his draft year, 22 points in 25 games. But again, for a high schooler, like, you got to dominate if you want to get drafted out of high school to the NHL. His senior season, which again is his draft year plus two, 27 points in 24 games. Then he goes to the USHL, Cedar Rapids. He plays 19 games, only puts up 3 points, but then has to go down to the NAHL, the North American Hockey League, the league below the USHL. Like, that is the jungle. Like, that is for people that are battling to keep their hockey dream alive. But for Malinsky, it ended up working out. He spent two seasons there, 45 points in 59 games in 2019. Again, by now, he's what? 21 years old. He gets an offer from Cornell. He was a 21-year-old college freshman going into it, spends 4 years at Cornell, becomes the captain, becomes one of their best players, having 26 points in 34 games, then gets signed by the Colorado Avalanche, debuts at the NHL level as well as more so the AHL level that year. Last year, 15 points in 76 games at the NHL level, and this year, 24 points in 51 games. Like, that is one of the most inspiring. I'm not talking about like coming over from a war-torn like country. Obviously, that's like more inspiring. It's more emotional. But in terms of like, nobody would have thought that this guy was going to be an NHLer until what? Like, I guess his freshman year of college. But even he was a 21-year-old freshman and put up 16 points in 25 games. Like, he was a junior like by normal age. But yeah, just an absolutely insane journey by him. And yeah, this season, he has been so damn good. I saw some people not really aware of him, and they were kind of shocked by him getting this number. He has the highest expected goals percentage right now on the Colorado Avalanche, 58.5%. Now, he is only playing like 18 minutes a night, but he's just a very reliable, very stable third-pair right-handed defenseman that's only going to increase his role once Brett Burns, maybe Brett Burns will play forever, but eventually Brett Burns will move on from the Colorado Avalanche, and he's going to become their second-pair guy. Maybe second power, they have Sam Girard, but he's going to be a staple of this team for a pretty long time. Like, I just love to see this. And this is just so forward thinking by Colorado to get this done, to sign him out of college, even though he was what, a 24, 25 year old college unrestricted free agent, bring him in, develop him at the AHL level. That's just what great teams do. And again, even if he is just a third pair guy and a very good third pair guy, that's easily worth 4.75. And again, they didn't overterm him into his early to mid-30s. Like, this is a perfect deal for a contending team. In Colorado, like, I chirped McFarland for a while from what, like, 2024, 2025, when he still had Georgiev, when the forward core depth really wasn't there. He traded for Charlie Coyle, gave up, like, Mittelstadt and Will Zellers. But the last year or so, he's been on it. Like, the Brock Nelson deal, although in the moment we thought they gave up a lot, and I still love that deal for the Islanders. Like, he's been amazing for them. They obviously brought in Blackwood, brought in Wedgwood, Malinsky now on such a cheap deal. Really impressive work by the Colorado Avalanche. That's why they're the best team in the entire NHL. And that's why they're probably going to do something also very creative at this year's deadline. Next up, Ben Chiarot, 3 years, $3.85 million or 3.8. And yeah, this definitely led to one of the usual wars between the analytical community and the eye test community, mainly the Detroit Red Wings fans defending this. I'm somewhere in the middle. Like, the analytics are undeniable that, like, the Detroit Red Wings are a significantly worse team analytically when he's on the ice than when he's off the ice. Now, he does play tough minutes, but I do see where Detroit Red Wings fans are coming from whenever I watch the Detroit Red Wings compared to 3-4 years ago, the first couple of years of his deal where he stood out in a bad way. He's been more invisible. He's just done his job. He's big. He skates pretty well. He lays the body solid, less of a liability, less penalties. I think he's been okay. The problem is he turned 35 years old in May. So it's not like you're signing Ben Chiarot back in 2022 and he's 31 years old. If he was 31, 32, I'd be all for this, but 3 years at still, again, 3.8, not the highest cap hit in the world. It's solid third pair, good third pair money. But there is a world where he regresses, the skating slows down, and he is a replacement level player that you could replace him for $1 million. I understand why Yzerman did this, because it's easier just to go with the known quantity than try to bargain Ben Hunt and go out and get someone like Carson Soucy would have been like the best option in terms of a left-handed defenseman to potentially replace him. But even Carson Soucy, probably on the open market, not coming from my Islanders, is probably going to get some kind of 3-year deal at $3 million. So the market is absolutely screwed. So I understand where he's coming from, but to act like this is a good deal to give a 35-year-old 3 years at $3.8 million, I can't get behind that. But again, unique teams, special teams, like the Colorado Avalanche, find guys like Sam Malinsky in nook and crannies that are tough to find. Versus Yzerman, it's been a little bit tough outside of drafting and developing. DeBrincat obviously kind of fell into his lap, if we're going to be honest. Like, he executed the trade, but that was a golden opportunity that he couldn't fumble. Meanwhile, some of his acquisitions in terms of Kopp, Compher, Chiarot, Hull have been a little bit underwhelming, and he's doubling down on those kind of underwhelming signings, those bigger, slower guys. Well, I don't think this is gonna like make or break Detroit. It's not the end of the world, but this probably is like a C-plus extension, if we're gonna be honest. The analytic community was acting like the Yzer plan is yet again over. Like, no, Detroit smashed expectations this year, but this was a little bit of a head scratcher. It was a little bit of an underwhelming deal. At 3 years, I thought you would have been able to get him at like $3 million. Again, 35 years old. That's been a theme today. 35 years old. Panarin, 35 in October. Chiarot, 35 in May. And that makes me a little bit hesitant for this kind of a deal. But let me know in the comments, what do you think about this episode? I got to get some guests on the show again. I've been doing solo too much. I love doing solo, but we got to get some guests on, whether it's players, whether it's just a co-host, one of my friends to hop on and record with me. But let me know in the comments, what do you think? I'll be seeing you in the next one. Peace.